This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Excited today to be joined by the president and CEO of Houston Methodist, Mark Boom, Dr. Mark Boom. Houston Methodist is one of the elite institutions in the country, always ranked at the very highest part of U.S. News and World Report, and really has built a great, great system. Dr. Boom, can you take a moment and introduce yourself, and then we'll ask you a number of questions about Houston Methodist, about priorities, about business today, and more.
Sure. Well, thank you, Scott. It's great to be with you today. My name is Mark Boom. I'm actually a physician. I'm an internist who got interested in the business side of medicine pretty early on and gravitated that way, although I still see about 100 patients or so in my practice. I've been with Houston Methodist now over 23 years, actually moved on up through the system, and I'm in my ninth year now as CEO of our system. The system has about 26,000 employees, 8 hospitals, one of which is an LTAC, one of which is, of course, our flagship academic medical center, which is in the heart of the Texas Medical Center, and then 6 community hospitals. We have a physician organization that employs about 800 to 900 physicians today, another 6,000 or so affiliated physicians, a global arm, as well as a very significant academic arm, our research institute and academic institute, which house all of our residency programs and a great deal of research.
And you've watched and been there for the transformation of Houston Methodist. Houston Methodist, over the last 25 years, became an elite, elite institution. Take a moment and tell us, how does that happen? How does the system become that great over a period of time? And a couple of things you're most proud of with respect to the system.
Yeah, it's been a great, great journey. And I've been there for a big part of it. Actually, in 2019, we celebrated our centennial, which was a lot of fun. And really, as I became CEO, we set a lot of goals around that centennial as well. But we're the home of Michael DeBakey, always an academic institution, that was in a pretty traditional role with an academic partner of over 50 years with Baylor College of Medicine. And really, our transformation began pretty dramatically and kind of emphatically and abruptly when Baylor decided to leave us back in 2004 for a neighboring hospital. And, to make a long story short at that point, our board had a chance and our leadership had a chance to look back at, okay, who are we? What are we about? And they said emphatically, we are an academic medical center. And we set about becoming what we call an independent academic medical center. We don't have, a traditional intertwined relationship with a medical school. We have an outstanding primary affiliation with, while Cornell up in New York City, as well as a number of secondary affiliations, particularly Texas A&M, with whom we do a engineering medicine program, but really recognized that we needed to own it. And at that point in time, set about creating more of a diverse footprint across Houston, recognizing that we would need to care for citizens really throughout the greater Houston area and not just be the flagship hospital. We built a research institute, we built an academic institute, and it's been an amazing ride. If I had to point to a couple key success factors, the first would be cultural. And so even before we started the transformation, I talked about building values upon which we grow and build each and every year. The second would be this structure as an independent academic medical center. And the third, critically importantly, is really laser focus on outcomes. And so, as a physician, and my colleagues and many others, we recognize that as a healthcare institution, it's all about the patient. And so we have been very, very focused. And so when you look at some of the things that have happened that have been great for us, like becoming on U.S. News and World Report Honor Roll, or being at the top of the ranks within Vizient or University Health System Consortium, and many other accolades, it's really about the fundamentals, what we call unparalleled safety, quality, service, and innovation, and focusing really on if we get those things right, the awards tend to follow, and the awards tend to follow because we are getting the fundamentals of patient care right. And we've been very proud of that. And if you ask one thing I'm most proud of, I think it would be those accomplishments.
Do you ever think how often it is in our world or in life, in an adverse event, in this case, it was Baylor College of Medicine deciding to leave Houston Methodist, leads to a new sort of clarity of vision and purpose and leads to greatness. Do you ever think about that or reflect on that?
Oh, I reflect on that all the time. You know, we've had a lot of adversity thrown our way. In 2001, we, you know, the entire Texas Medical Center was flooded by Tropical Storm Allison, and really some of those values, what we call the eye care values that I referenced, they were born out of that difficult time. We had to reassess, of course, when a strategic partner decided to go a different way. And that reassessment energized the institution. It rallied everybody around a common purpose. And, you know, we've spent the last 15, 16 years now around that common purpose with great outcome. And, you know, frankly, we've been through many other disasters. Harvey was the most recent 3 years ago when, you know, so much of the city flooded. Thankfully, the hospitals didn't. But, you know, we had tremendous numbers of employees who flooded. And again, it was a chance for us to bond together as a family, as an employee base, as a physician base, and emerge stronger. And, you know, goodness knows we're all in the midst of that now, of course, with COVID. And, you know, recognizing as challenging as these times are, that we will emerge even stronger with our culture even more reinforced by everything that we do during this time.
Taking a moment on COVID-19, the virus keeps on evolving. It sort of, you know, comes in different waves and so forth. What's some of your perspectives on COVID-19 and living with it and managing it? And what are you seeing currently?
Yeah, it's been quite a journey. You know, we had in Houston an early shutdown in March, and it managed to stave off, you know, the kinds of things that we saw in some of the other areas, particularly New York and New Jersey. You know, and so we had a significant uptick, but we got that in control by, you know, April 10th, 11th was the peak in Houston, and at what I would consider very manageable levels for us. Out of 2,400 beds, we had about 210 or so with patients with COVID at peak, and, you know, came down after that, but unfortunately have now led the way around the country, you know, in Houston and rest of Texas, Arizona, Florida, and a couple other places. Of, you know, the next surge, we, you know, we can get into the debate whether it's a different surge or it's just a continuation, but either way, it is quite something. You know, we sit here today with about 720 patients with COVID in-house. So, you know, a solid 3.5 times our last peak and 7 times where we sat on Memorial Day. And it's quite a stress and strain for our staff and our institution. We're managing through that. We think we're seeing some cresting in the data, so we're hopeful that we don't have to go too much higher. But we've learned so much. I mean, it's been, you know, a 4-month period where what we've done to care for these patients has evolved tremendously. And our clinicians, you know, have gained specific experience like using remdesivir or, you know, convalescent plasma. We were the first hospital actually in the country to utilize convalescent plasma. And of course, proning and avoidance of intubation and now steroids and many other advancements. But I think we can't discount just plain old good, you know, good old fashioned experience as well. We all know the heart surgeon who's done hundreds or thousands of cases in his or her career is obviously in a different place than the heart surgeon who's just starting out and has done, you know, dozens. And I think it's the same thing here. Our clinicians have gained experience. They've gained the instinct in the, you know, the art side of medicine and caring for these patients. And we're seeing much better outcomes today than we were seeing at the beginning of this crisis, which of course is a wonderful thing. But that by no means minimizes how challenging this is and how severe this is for some people who are coming and seeking care with us.
A moment to give a shout out to your team and your clinicians and frontline workers and everybody there at Houston Methodist.
Oh man, these people are amazing. They're tired. I mean, it's been, you know, 120 days of doing this, and you know, now we're at peak, so it's even harder now. But to watch my colleagues work and just to recognize, you know, the calling that healthcare is and coming in to do what they need to do and care for the citizens of Houston and beyond. I'm just so humbled by all of them, so proud of all of them. You know, one of my key jobs is to find the support, find the protection for these individuals so they can do the great jobs they're doing, and they really have been tremendous.
Take a moment on, you've had this great leadership career. You were an internist by background. You became CEO and president of a great health system. That health system itself saw this amazing transformation, and I had never heard the story of what was really the kickoff to that and was glad to hear it today, or at least the kickoff to taking it to another level. Take a moment, if you would, on three pieces of advice you would give to emerging leaders, Dr. Boom.
Sure, I'd be happy to. You know, number one, I think, I just mentioned it, talking about the staff I'm so proud of. I think healthcare is a calling. I think it is something, whether you're a physician, you're a nurse, you're a peer administrator, or you're one of the many, many people in, you know, in roles that are present in healthcare and non-healthcare, you know, but that are there to help with healthcare. I think people are called to that. I think people recognize the privilege it is to care for a community and to care for patients. And so piece number one is, you know, keep patients at the center of everything you do. Recognize this noble calling. And honestly, if you don't feel that calling, maybe this isn't the career for you. We need people who each and every day are there putting patients, you know, at the center. The second is, you know, talking about our values. And I mentioned how important those have been to our institution. They really are fundamental to who we are. I mean, we literally bleed our eye care values at Houston Methodist. And if you're going to be a healthcare leader and you're going to run a group, or you're going to run a larger group, or you're going to run an organization, understanding the values, recognizing that values are something that are created intentionally, and you want to create them intentionally, and you need to kind of, you know, be beating back any of the unintentional values that can creep in sometimes. And that if you don't do that, actually, there's no way the institution could be so successful. And so as CEO, that is my number one most important job, is creating the guardrails, keeping our institution, you know, within the guardrails around the values. And then finally, think of yourself as a coach. At the end of the day, successful institutions, especially the higher you get and the broader your responsibility is, if you are a coach, you know, who literally has to tell the pitcher, let's just say, exactly what he does every single moment of his pitching career, that doesn't exactly mean you have a very good pitcher who's going to win a lot of ball games for you. You need to be the coach that's helping, you know, train people, that's helping motivate people, that's identifying talent, that's giving talent the resources they need to get their jobs done, that's taking down obstacles when obstacles get in the way. I always say, if we got to get from A to Z, and I need to tell one of my senior executives, you know, go from A to B to C to D, et cetera, I don't have the right executive in place. What I need to do is say, we're going from A to Z. Let's talk about the goals, how we'll get there. And, you know, come back to me when you're at D and you're struggling to get to E because, you know, some obstacles in your way, and let me talk that through with you, or let me use my role to help move those obstacles aside. So think of yourself as that coach, and you'll have the best teams in place that will ultimately get things done.
And I'll ask you one more question, Mark, and I appreciate your time with us today. And I love the concept of great clarity on values and think of yourself as a coach. I think fantastic. And I also love the concept you made on, and I'll get to the final question, I promise, with this question, this concept of, like, you have to be careful not to let the wrong values slip in. And that reminds me of our own behaviors of constantly trying to stay within the guardrails of here's what we should be doing, and not complaining or doing other kinds of things or things we shouldn't be doing, whatever it might be, that are the bad vices we have that can creep into our behaviors. But talk for a moment about the top three priorities you see this year. When you look at the next 6 to 12 months, what do you see as your top three priorities?
Well, that's an interesting year to ask that, because, of course, you know, our world was turned upside down by COVID this year. But nonetheless, I think the best institutions, the best organizations, you know, are going to thrive through this. And as I said, these external, almost existential challenges oftentimes make an institution stronger. So our culture, I know, will be reinforced through this process. You know, if I had to look at my three top priorities, to be honest, you know, the first that I'm going to list it was already a priority, but I would probably not have honestly put it in my top three. But given the events of the last couple of months, it's now my number one, and that's diversity, equity, and inclusion in our institution and beyond. We believe, with our eye care values, our faith basis, you know, that we need to be a shining light on this. And it's very clear with what we've gone through societally that people like me and people like, and institutions like ours need to play an even more significant leadership role in this. It's been a journey for us, but it's a journey that, frankly, we're going to put on hyperdrive here. And so that's a key priority. Two other priorities. One is always, and we sound a little boring sometimes, but boring actually breeds consistency, and that consistency gets consistently excellent results. And it is, you know, what I've called our, what I've called our vision for the second century. And that vision is six simple words. It's unparalleled safety, quality, service, and innovation. And in that order, very specifically, so that, that second is really driving of the excellence and consistently focusing on those fundamentals, that patient outcome every time. And the rest tends to fall in place when we do that. And the final one is even a doubling down on the last part of that, and that's innovation. So over the last 3 years or so, we've really made healthcare innovation a significant priority. And, you know, we've always had innovation in our DNA. Dr. Bakey founded and advanced all sorts of aspects within vascular disease and heart disease and treatment and surgery. I'm not talking clinical and research innovation. That's embedded in our DNA. I'm talking now about sort of digital and future healthcare kinds of innovation. So we built a center for innovation a couple of years ago, basically said, tell us how many resources you need, drive forward, let's push this. And, you know, it is something that's already paying dividends, and it's something that we will continue to focus on. But let me tell you, this year, you know, there's these sayings about, you know, luck favoring the prepared mind, or, you know, some version thereof. We couldn't have been better prepared, you know, when it came to some of the things we've had to do this year, you know, pivoting into virtual medicine, which we already were doing substantially through this effort. We had virtual ICU literally turning on 3 weeks before COVID, because we were working on it over the last couple of years, and then utilized that in COVID and on and on. And so that key fundamental focus, I really do think we are at a time where we are going to transform the patient experience using digital technology. And we are at the forefront of that.
Well, that's fantastic. And you've heard so many stories like that, and you see so much of this in action. Health systems have gotten way ahead in certain areas, whether it was telemedicine or digital, whatever it might be, or innovation, found themselves at this moment in time in a great position to deal with so many of the challenges coming at them because they'd laid the groundwork before. I mean, it's almost just as you had said that, you know, luck happens to those that are prepared or well-prepared, and it's really true. Anyways, Dr. Boom, I want to thank you so much for your time today. Just brilliant, amazing what you all have done with Houston Methodist, and we appreciate what you do. Just a great commitment to healthcare and to diversity and everything. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Scott. It was my pleasure.